for finding their seats. Thank you for participating in the baptism and being part of that and being ruckus and loud. Thank you for that. We also are grateful that Pastor Gerald Rudd is here. Pastor Rudd led this congregation faithfully for 13 years, and it was wonderful to see him baptizing, wasn't it? It's good to see him back there. Baptism fits him a little better than it does me at this moment. There's a comfortability there. And he'll be preaching tonight, and I hope that you'll come out and hear him preach. I'm looking forward to that as well. One of the more interesting conversations, and I must say one of the more intense conversations that I ever had as a preacher, was with a man. He had grown up in church. He had come through the youth group, but then he had enlisted in the military, and he had gone out, but he had come home, and we were talking on the phone about religion, about Christianity. And it was a very nice conversation. We were talking about some of the issues inside of the faith. He had, by his admission, left God, and he had gone out, and he had not served God for many years. But he was coming back to the church. He was asking questions again. He was, I guess, what you would call a seeker. And so we're talking about the issues of the faith. And at some point in that conversation, there was just an outburst of anger that came from him. And he said, you know what I hate about God? He said, you know what frustrates me about God? He said, for years I sit on the church pew. I was taken to church. I grew up in church. And he said, I would sit there and I would see other people having an experience with him. He said, other people were near to God. I mean, God would let them get close to him. And he said, I went to church. I prayed, but it never seemed like my prayers got above my head. He said, I would see people and they would be flooded with something. And I was worshiping. I was praying. I read my Bible, not as I should, but I was doing it. And it seemed as though God was embracing them. They were experiencing the nearness of God, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And he said, to be quite frank with you, that made me angry. And when I think about it, it makes me angry still. And I've thought about that conversation over the years. And I don't think that his experience, those feelings, although not many would verbalize them in that way, it seems to me that there are people in any church across America, maybe one or two, maybe a dozen, maybe several dozen, who could sympathize with what he was thinking. Here he was working, he was doing, maybe not like he said that he should have, but God was drawing near to others, and God wasn't drawing near to him. And maybe you're here today and you can sympathize with that. And maybe you say, you know, yeah, that's the way I feel. I go to church. I do these things. And I look around the auditorium at times and I see people who are getting blessed. That never happens to me. I hear people talk about praying and how they sought God and how it was just this amazing experience. And I pray and not much really happens in my life. And that does frustrate me more than I tell people. And so I want to talk to you about the nearness of God. I want to talk to you about how do you get near to God? How does he get near to you? How do you experience God? How do you get close to God? And I'm not sure that I have all the answers, but I want to use a case study that's found in the Bible in Luke chapter 19. It's a story of a man named Zacchaeus. And Jesus is going through a place called Jericho. And from what I understand, Jericho is the lowest place on earth, physically. And so Jesus is going through this ancient town. It's a sort of a destitute kind of place, I guess. And he's coming through, and he has this encounter with a tax collector. And I want to look at it because this is a man who is seeking Jesus, but he's also a man who finds Jesus and has an amazing experience with Jesus. And so in our time together, I just want to take this part in just a few pieces. Verse 1 of chapter 19. Then Jesus entered the house through Jericho. Pardon me, entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. And so he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all complained, saying, he has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. And then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, 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 I give half of my goods to the poor. If I have taken anything from anyone of false accusation, I restore fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which is lost. This is one of the great flannograph stories in the church. I don't know if you grew up with the flannograph in Sunday school, but if you do, I won't describe it. But it's the story of Zacchaeus. And the Bible says that Zacchaeus was short. And on the flannograph, that's what is always pointed out. He was a very short person. But I don't think the people in Zacchaeus, as they would have called him, short. Because the Bible says he was a tax collector. And in the ancient world, in the Roman world, the Romans did not collect taxes like we do. So when it says there's a tax collector, it doesn't mean that he worked for the IRS or for the Roman government. When the Romans wanted to tax a part of the country, they would auction off the right to tax. You could bid for the right to tax, and as long as you paid the Romans what was coming to the Romans, you could take whatever you wanted. And so tax collectors didn't bury you in paperwork. They could bury you at times. They were the gangsters of the day. They were loan sharks, and the Romans kept their hands off of how the tax collectors did their business as long as the Romans got paid. There's an interesting place in a Roman writing by Suetonius. Suetonius says that he was traveling, and he was a Roman living at this time. He was traveling, and he came to a village, and he saw in the town square there was a statue of a man, and it says his name, and it says, this statue is built to so-and-so, an honest tax collector. And think about that. Tax collectors were so dishonest, they were so crooked, they were so violent in many ways, that if they found an honest one, they'd build a statue to him. And that's who Zacchaeus was. He was a tax collector. He was a man who would use violence, who would use lying, who would use intimidation to collect taxes. And it doesn't say that he's just a tax collector. It says that he is the chief tax collector. He's the godfather, title of the sermon. But here he is, and he's coming, and he sort of runs the, I think you could say he runs the underbelly of the town. He is the chief tax collector, but here he comes, and he's seeking Jesus, and we don't know why he's seeking Jesus, but we find here that he finds Jesus and has this tremendous experience. Now, how did he seek him? Because I think that's the crux of the issue. How did Zacchaeus seek Jesus? Because I think that that's why he finds what he does. It's in a certain kind of seeking that you find Jesus. And I want you to see, first of all, that Zacchaeus seeks him personally. He seeks him personally. Verse 5 says that he climbs a tree. He wants to get up above the crowd. He wants to see Jesus for himself. And then when Jesus comes by, he says, you know, Zacchaeus, I need to eat with you. I want to spend time with you alone. And Zacchaeus is joyfully receptive of that. And they go to Zacchaeus' house. But notice again, he seeks Jesus personally. Now, that's important because in churches throughout America, there are a lot of people who think that they have a personal relationship with Jesus, that they have sought him personally, but they have only really sought him in the crowd. They only know Jesus through other people. When I was young, I had two friends. One was Ryan and one was PJ. And Ryan and I were next door neighbors, and so we would ride the bus together, and then we would pick up PJ. PJ would sit with us, and so all through really elementary school, PJ, Ryan, and I rode the bus, all three of us sitting on that little seat. It got a little cramped as we got bigger, but it started out all three of us together. And we were best friends. We would spend a lot of Saturdays together. PJ would come over to Ryan's house, and I would ride my bike to Ryan's, and then we would spend the day playing together. And if you would have asked me then, I would have said, I have two best friends. I have Ryan, and I have PJ. But what's interesting about that relationship, and I did not understand it at the time, was that we had a wonderful time when it was Ryan, PJ, and me. But when Ryan was sick and it was just me and PJ riding the bus, we rode to school in silence. There wasn't anything to talk about. And what does that mean? It means that I thought I had a friendship with PJ, but I only had a group friendship. We were only friends. We were friends of Ryan. And when Ryan was there, we were all friends. When Ryan wasn't there, because we really didn't have a personal relationship, there was nothing going on between us. And again, oftentimes, you can be in church for a long period of life and think, I have a relationship with Jesus. I have sought Him personally. But you really haven't. You have a relationship with Jesus that is contingent upon a group. In the church that I pastored for many years, I used to walk around the sanctuary. And I would pray, but I also liked to see what was on the pews, see if anybody was drawing pictures of me on the bulletins, you know, that kind of thing, and forgetting them. But I'd walk around, and I would see so many Bibles that were left in the church. And I wanted to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I just assumed that they had a Bible they read at church and a Bible that they read at home. But you know what? I think that's optimistic. I think that there were a lot of people in that church, and there may be a lot of people here, who only read the Bible when they're in a group. You don't read it at home. You worship, and you have moving experiences when you worship in a group, but you don't worship at home. You pray, and you can pray in a group, but you don't go home and pray. And what does that mean? It means that you worship Jesus, you follow Jesus, but He's in the crowd to you. And as long as you're in the crowd and you're in a moving worship experience, the word is great, the worship is great, the praying is great, but when you go home, there's something lacking. And that's because you've never sought Him personally. You've sought Him, but it's always been in a group. And so your prayer life is dry or non-existent Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, but it's great on Sunday if they get the songs right, because it's all about the group and the worship experience. And what does that mean? Again, you follow Him in the group, but you don't follow Him personally. There are kids, and they'll be in a youth group, and you'll look at that youth group, and it'll be on fire, and you'll look at some of those youth, and you'll say, boy, those kids are on fire, man. Look at them. But then maybe something happens in that youth group, and two or three of their best friends leave the youth group. And all of a sudden, because their best friends aren't coming with them, all of a sudden they aren't on fire anymore. And he said, well, what happened there? They were serving in a group. They followed Jesus in a group, and as long as they were sitting on a pew with all of their best friends and everything was going fine in those relationships, their relationship with Jesus was okay. But when those best friends left, they were like me sitting next to Pitney J, PJ. We had nothing to talk about. There was silence there. All of a sudden, there was deadness in that relationship because I thought we had a relationship, but we never did. It was always contingent upon this other person. Sometimes somebody will go through the youth group and they'll go off to college. And as they go to college, they might have been on fire in their home church. They grew up in that church. They were on fire. They were a leader in the group. But when they go off to college, they start to drift from God. And they never really get established. And as you see them at college, they never really find a church. They never really get established. And their relationship starts to drift. And it's easy for you and I to say, well, they went to college and the professors talked them out of Christianity, or they were misled, or maybe they begin to backslide. And I don't doubt that any of that is true. But what is also true is that they served God in the crowd. They were able to serve God faithfully when they were with that group of people. But when they were left on their own, when they went to college, they found out they didn't have anything personally. Praying became hard. Worship became hard. Reading the Bible became hard. It was easy when they were in the crowd, but they followed Him in the crowd, but not personally. It happens to millions of people. It happens to millions of people. There are people who serve in church. They attend a church for 40, 50 years. But then they get to a certain age, and their friends begin to perhaps pass away. And they look around the church, and all of a sudden they see a church that used to be theirs, but everybody's strangers now. They don't know the people like they used to. And they look around, and it doesn't feel like their church anymore. And you know what happens? Sometimes that affects their walk with God. Not because that the loss of those people should have dimmed it, but they were serving God in that crowd. They never followed Him personally. And what Zacchaeus does is he says, I got to follow him personally. I've got to get beyond the crowd. I've got to find something with him that is just between him and me. Martin Lloyd-Jones was one of the great English preachers in London. He pastored at Westminster Chapel. And he tells about a young guy comes to him. He's 18 years old. He's just heard him preach. He comes to the office and he says, you know, doctor, my parents brought me to this church. And I have been here my entire life. I've always been the Christian. I mean, whatever room I was in, I was the Christian. I might have been the only Christian in the classroom. And I've always taken notes of your sermon so that I can debate other people and win. He said, but for the first time tonight, it dawned on me, this is really personal, isn't it? Christianity is really personal, isn't it? And you can sit on a church pew and that never dawn on you that it's not about the group. That you have to find something with Jesus that is yours and his alone. I had a friend named Phil McKnight, and you'd have to know Phil because the way he said this, it was comical, but it sounds harsh. But Phil had three boys, and he would say, listen, and he would tell his boys this, and sometimes he did it where other people could hear. He would say, listen, I want you to go to heaven, but if you don't go, that's fine. I'm going by myself. And if you want to come, you come, but you're not going to keep me from going to heaven, and I'm going whether any of you come with me or not. And that's when it gets personal. When you say, listen, all of you, I don't care if you pray, but I'm going to pray. I don't care if you worship, but I'm going to worship. I don't care if you glorify, but I'm going to glorify, because it's not about you. I don't serve him in a group. It's very personal to me. You know as well as I do that if you want to get near to somebody, you got to get alone with them. I mean, if you're never willing to be alone with Jesus and develop the personal aspect where your Monday morning alone time with Jesus is just as rewarding as your Sunday morning worship experience. It's that real to you. If you don't draw near to him in that way, listen to me, you're always going to feel like somebody has something that you don't have spiritually, because it's true. They're drawing near to him. They're getting alone time with him, and you're only getting group time with him. Of course they have something that you don't have. I mean, when a guy dates a girl, what do you know instinctively? It's like, you know, if this relationship is ever going to progress to the place where I want it to progress, I got to get her alone. All this group time, I mean, I got to find a way to get her to go out with me by herself. I mean, I want nearness, and this isn't going to work. And it's not going to work with your relationship with Jesus either. It's going to have to get personal with you. It's got to get personal. So with Zacchaeus, he seeks him personally. He says, I got to get out above this crowd. I got to find him. I got to get him alone with, you know, I got to find some way to corner him. I'm not going to serve him in this crowd of 2,000, but I'm going to get alone with him. And you got to get alone with him. Well, notice secondly that not only does he seek him personally, but he seeks him humbly. He's humble about it. I mean, it's a very humbling thing for him to climb that tree. Because he's a guy, and he's wearing a robe. And if you have a beard, you ought not be able to identify with this, but have you ever tried to climb a tree in a dress? And there's everybody around there. And, I mean, but that's what he's doing. He's going up the tree in a dress, and guys didn't do that in that day and age. I mean, listen, it was considered to be uncouth for a man to run. And that's what's so great about the prodigal son, right? Because the father runs to him, and the only way you're going to run is you got to hike up your dress and run. And that just doesn't work. But think about how bad it is not to run, but to try to climb a tree with everybody down there. And there's Zacchaeus. And he must have been ridiculed. I mean, you can hear what the teenage boys are saying to him as he gets up that tree. You can hear what's going on with that. But he doesn't care. He wants nearness with Jesus. He's able to humbly humiliate himself by getting up in that tree to get a glimpse of Jesus. Listen to me. It's in our DNA to not want to humble ourselves. Because when you humble yourselves, you risk humiliating yourself. And that's what we don't want to do, because so by nature, we tend not to want to humble ourselves. I mean, you see it in kids, you know, I grew up on the Wonder Years, but you got Diary of the Wimpy Kid now. I mean, it's all about life in junior high. And what drives you, most kids in junior high, at least it drove me, it's like, I don't want to be embarrassed. It's like, I got to watch who I hang out with because, you know, I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to be picked on. I don't want to stand out. I don't want to get above the crowd. I mean, that's why even when you get 18, 19, 20, you try to get a friend to sit you up with a girl because, you know, if I ask her out in public, it could get ugly. I mean, I could get humiliated. If I get shot down in public, it could really hurt me here. And I mean, even when you get older, you don't like asking for a job. I mean, it's hard to go into a job and, you know, say, you know, I'm looking for a job, I'm unemployed. And I mean, it's humbling. I mean, it hurts. But even though it's not in our DNA to humble ourselves, it's in the DNA of the gospel that you have to humble yourself. I mean, it's all through the gospel. Remember Naaman in the Old Testament? And Naaman has this leprosy. And he comes to the prophet Elijah and he wants to be healed. And somebody's told him that Elijah can heal him. He brings $3 to $4 million worth of stuff to give to Elijah to heal him. He's going to make Elijah a rich man. Elisha, pardon me. He's going to make Elisha a rich man. He's willing to give him $3 to $4 million in stuff just to heal him. But he gets up there and Elisha says, go to the River Jordan, dunk yourself 7 times. In other words, what money can't buy, humility will buy you, Naaman. If you want something from God, you're going to have to humble yourself. And the Jordan River was horrendous. It was terrible. It was filthy. And I think probably Naaman sitting there saying, why couldn't he send me to at least a cleaner river? I mean, Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, was in that part of the country. And there are some beautiful places in that part of the country. In fact, he came to a place in the river which was so beautiful. And this is what Muhammad said. All of his men were jumping in and they said, Prophet, why don't you get in there? And he said, it's too beautiful. He said, I will only enter sin to something that beautiful when I go into heaven. And he should have entered in there. That was his chance. But in any case, there are beautiful places there. There's beautiful, wonderful places there. Why couldn't he have sent him to one of those places? Why the Jordan? Because listen, if you want something from God, humility is the price you're going to have to pay. Listen to me. Jesus Christ humbled himself on the cross. He was humiliated on the cross. He did that for you. Now you're going to have to do something for him. The price is humility. In fact, the Bible says, James says it and Peter says it too, that God resists the proud. If he sees pride in you, he won't draw near. He won't get close to you. I mean, baptism, look at this. That's a humbling thing, isn't it? I mean, to be dunked in front of everybody, you come up looking worse than when you went in. It's just in front of this audience. That's a humbling thing. But you know what? Humility is part of the DNA of the Christian life. I mean, even an altar call. I know there's a lot of debate on an altar call, and I realize that the altar call did not originate until the 19th century. And so Jesus never had an altar call. He never, you know, said, now after I've preached, Peter, you sing a couple verses, just come as I am, and we're going to have an altar call here. And that's not the way Jesus did things. I understand that was going on, but listen to me. If you're too proud to pray in front of people and ask Jesus in front of people, you're probably not going to get anything anyway. Because the DNA of the Christian life is humility. I mean, Naaman had to go dunk himself. Baptism is part of it. I mean, listen, if you sit in the pew and you say, boy, I really need something from Jesus, but maybe I'll just pray here because that would be too humbling to go down there. Listen, you're probably not going to get anyway if you're not going to humble yourself, so you might as well just go to the altar and pray. Because humility is part of what Jesus Christ is trying to do in your life. And if you aren't going to humble yourself, you're not going to get very far with Jesus. You have to seek him personally. You have to seek him humbly. But thirdly, you got to seek him openly. Openly. Notice Zacchaeus. Notice what Jesus says first of all. He doesn't say, Zacchaeus, do you believe on me? And belief is vital. We're saved through faith. But that's not what Jesus says. He doesn't say, Zacchaeus, will you accept me? Although accepting Jesus is something that we're doing as Christians. But he says, Zacchaeus, take me home with you. Will you take me home with you? And Zacchaeus is receptive to that. Now listen to me. Belief is foundational. Accepting Jesus is foundational. But you, embodied in both of those words is the ideal that you will be open enough to Jesus that he can come into your life and he can alter things in your life. And look what happens with Zacchaeus. There's openness in two ways. First of all, Zacchaeus says, come home with me. Come home with me. Now, he wasn't able to call his wife and say, clean the house. We got company coming. He wasn't able to do any of that stuff. So who knows what Jesus saw? But the point is that Jesus came in and he saw everything that Zacchaeus had. And Zacchaeus was able to welcome him into that situation. And secondly, you notice that Zacchaeus was willing to be changed by Jesus. I don't know how this ideal came, and the scriptures seem to indicate that it was Zacchaeus' ideal that he would give away half his goods to the poor and return to anybody that he had committed fraud against fourfold. I don't know how that happened, but we do know that Zacchaeus was willing to do it, and that's what Jesus wanted him to do. See, sometimes people will say in our generation, you know what, I'm not obedient to Jesus, and I realize I'm not who I should be, but I do have a personal relationship with Jesus. But listen to me. Forget the lordship of Jesus. Forget the fact that Jesus said, why do you call me Lord and not do the things that I say? Forget the fact that he's not your Lord or you would be obedient to him. And that was Jesus' words. You can't even have a personal relationship with Jesus, or anybody for that matter, unless you're open to them. Unless you're open to them. Unless you're open to them speaking into your life and asking you to do things that you wouldn't normally do if you were in a relationship with them. That's part of being in a relationship. I mean, imagine you're a woman and it's your wedding day and there you come and there's Prince Charming and you come down and you get to the part in the service where you exchange vows, and just as the preacher is about to prompt you on the vows, your Prince Charming says, now listen, I just want to make one thing clear before we do all this vow stuff. I want to be in a relationship with you and I want to be married to you, but you will never ask me to do something that I don't want to do. Okay. And if I don't want to go someplace, you're not to ask me to go there. If I don't want to pick it up, don't you ask me to pick it up. If you want it cleaned, but I don't want to clean it, don't ask me to clean it. You're not allowed to ask me to do anything that I don't want to do. But I want a personal relationship with you. I think this can be a wonderful marriage. And if you're the woman, what do you say? Do you say, boy, I just thought he couldn't get any better. And then he said this. You don't say that. You say, the wedding's off. I don't know what you call this. But I am not comfortable living in your dictatorship because a personal relationship means that I'm going to get to ask you to do a lot of things that you wouldn't want to do. And you're going to ask me to do a lot of things I don't want to do. But because we're married, because we're in this relationship, we're going to do them. And so how can you say, you know what, I'm not very obedient. I realize that I'm not a very good servant, but I have this personal relationship with Jesus. No, you don't, because if you had a personal relationship with Jesus, you would be open to him moving stuff around in your life. It's that way in any relationship, but why doesn't Jesus get to speak into your life and say, listen to me, you need to do this, you need to pick that up, you need to stop doing that. We're in a relationship, and maybe you wouldn't do it if we weren't in the relationship, but we are, so can you do this for me? I mean, listen, if you're not receptive to Jesus saying that, you're not in a personal relationship. Even among friends, you get to ask each other to do things you probably wouldn't do if you weren't in the relationship. How many people have been called at 11 o'clock by a friend to go pick them up because their car broke down? Do you want to do it? No, but you're in a relationship. You have to do it. And so listen to me. If you're in a relationship with Jesus at any level, he gets to speak into your life and say, listen, I don't want you to do that anymore. He gets to speak into your life and say, you know what, that's pretty offensive. You need to stop doing that. He gets to speak into your life and say, why don't you do this instead of that? I mean, listen, any relationship has that component. It has that openness. So Zacchaeus is here, and he's open to Jesus coming in and seeing him, but he's also open to Jesus changing what he sees about him. And listen to me. If you seek Jesus like that, I think he can be found in your life. If you're on a church pew and you never seek him personally, yeah, you're going to look around and people are going to have something that you don't have. They've got a personal relationship and you got a relationship within a group. Okay? And so that's why they got something you don't have. If you're not willing to humble yourself, listen, the Lord resists the proud. Lord resists the proud. If you're not willing to throw the doors open and say, Jesus, you can see what I am, you can see what I have, and you can change what you see that needs to be changed. I'm opening myself up to you. Listen, if you're not going to do that, there's not going to be nearness because you're slamming doors in his face. Of course, you're saying, Jesus, you can't go there. You can't tell me to do, you can't tell me what to do with my money. You can't tell me what to do with my sex life. You can't tell me what to do with my children. You can't tell me what to do in my marriage, but I want to be open to you. Well, listen, you're not going to have any nearness as long as you're slamming all the doors in his face. But if you're willing to step out and seek him personally and say, Jesus, I don't want to serve you in the group. I want something personal with you. I don't want something with you on Sunday. I want something with you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That's what I want. And I'm willing to humiliate myself. I'm willing to humble myself. I'm willing to pay any price to get it. I don't care what the price is. And I am open to you. Come into my life. Look at it all. Change it all if you want. Listen to me. If that's the way you approach Jesus, you're going to get somewhere with him. You're going to get somewhere with him. What's interesting here with Zacchaeus is that out of this nearness with Jesus comes this life-altering change. Look at Zacchaeus. Before he came to Jesus, money was his God. It had to be because he wouldn't have been a tax collector if he didn't love money. I mean, the only reason you become a tax collector is to get money, to get rich. And money is his source of everything. But with the nearness of God coming in, he says, wow, boy, if I can have Jesus, I mean, if I can be in a relationship with him, if I can have this, who needs money? I'll give away half of it right off the top, and anything else I've done, I'll give fourfold. Money's not important to me anymore, but boy, the presence of Jesus is. And that's how you know you've been changed. That's how you know you've been changed. The way you know that you have really seen Jesus is that you see him and you say, oh, he's better than anything else I got. The way you know you've come into the presence of Jesus is that you get a glimpse of him and all the stuff you want from him isn't as valuable as him himself. I mean, listen, one of the things that happens in most people's lives is that when they come to Jesus, most people come wanting something. Okay. Their life is terrible and they want Jesus to fix their life. Their finances are in bad shape. They need something there. They're lonely. But they come to Jesus and they need something from him. But you know what? When you see Jesus and when you are changed by Jesus, you say, listen, he's far better than anything I could ever get from him. And that's how the nearness of God just transforms your life. When I was younger, my father used to play this game, and maybe your parents played the game where he'd put coins in his hand, and we would all pry, you know, try to get the coins out of the hand, you know, and pry fingers back. And then sooner or later, you know, it took some time. Dad was maybe a little stingier than most people. It took a time, you know. He'd let you get the coins out of his hand, and you know what I would do? I'd run off, you know. I got the coins, I'm gone. But listen to me. When you see Jesus for all that he is, maybe you're reaching for the coins, but when the nearness of Jesus comes into your life and you see him and he ministers to you, you say, forget the coins. I just want to hold the hand, you know. You see Jesus for who he is, and it transforms your life. Will you stand with me? Maybe today, as we're talking about Zacchaeus, Holy Spirit speaking to you. And you say, you know, I never thought about it, but I've always sought Jesus in the crowd. I've always sought Jesus in the crowd. I do real good on Sundays. I do real good, you know, if I'm around the right people, but it's really hard for me. I don't have much going on with Jesus when I'm alone. There's just not nothing. It's not personal with me. And you say today, you know what? It's got to get personal. I got to step out of the crowd it's just got to get personal with me. And maybe today you just want to tell him that. And maybe even now you sense a lack of humility in your life. I mean, even as you stand here, you say, you know what? I need to step out. There's a problem in my relationship with Jesus, but I don't want to go down there. I don't want to humble myself. I'm not going to humble myself. I pray that you will know that God resists the proud, but he gives more grace to the humble. What you have, money can't buy. What you need, money can't buy. What you need, crying and begging can't buy. But what you need, humility can get for you from God. It got healing from Naaman when nothing else would get it. Maybe today you're here and Holy Spirit is speaking to you and he's telling you, you know, you've slammed some doors in our face. There's some places in your life you won't let Jesus Christ touch. And that's why you don't fear the nearness of Jesus. That's why nothing's happening in your life, because you keep slamming the door in his face. And you need to open up that aspect of your life, your finances, your romantic life, the family life. You've shut that off from Jesus Christ, and it's time you let him in there and move and work and have his way in your life. However he speaks to you, will you respond humbly today? I want to pray with you.